Mademoiselle Roget left her mother's house on Sunday morning, June the 22nd, 18-blank, with the ostensible purpose of going to see her aunt, or some other connection, in the Rue de Drôme. From that hour, nobody is proven to have seen her. There is no trace or tidings of her at all. There has no person whatever come forward so far who saw her at all on that day after she left her mother's door. Now, though we have no evidence that Marie Roget was in the land of the living after 9 o'clock on Sunday, June the 22nd, we have proof that up to that hour she was alive. On Wednesday noon at 12, a female body was discovered afloat on the shore of the Barrière de Roulet. This was, even if we presume that Marie Roget was thrown into the river within 3 hours after she left her mother's house, only 3 days from the time she left her home, 3 days to an hour. But it is folly to suppose that the murder, if murder was committed on her body, could have been consummated soon enough to have enabled her murderers to throw the body into the river before midnight. Those who are guilty of such horrid crimes choose darkness rather than light. Thus we see that if the body found in the river was that of Marie Roget, it could only have been in the water 2.5 days, or 3 at the outside. All experience has shown that drowned bodies, or bodies thrown into the water immediately after death by violence, require from 6 to 10 days for sufficient decomposition to take place to bring them to the top of the water. Even where a cannon is fired over a corpse, and it rises before at least 5 or 6 days' immersion, it sinks again if let alone. Now we ask, what was there in the case to cause a departure from the ordinary course of nature? If the body had been kept in its mangled state on shore until Tuesday night, some trace would be found on shore of the murderers. It is a doubtful point also whether the body would be so soon afloat, even were it thrown in after having been dead 2 days. And furthermore, it is exceedingly improbable that any villains who had committed such a murder, as is here supposed, would have thrown the body in without weight to sink it, when such a precaution could have so easily been taken. The editor here proceeds to argue that the body must have been in the water not 3 days merely, but at least 5 times 3 days, because it was so far decomposed that Beauvais had great difficulty in recognizing it. This latter point, however, was fully disproved. I continue the translation. What then are the facts on which Monsieur Beauvais says that he has no doubt the body was that of Marie Roget? He ripped up the gown sleeve and says he found marks which satisfied him of the identity. The public generally supposed those marks to have consisted of some description of scars. He rubbed the arm and found hair upon it. Something as indefinite, we think, as can readily be imagined, as little conclusive as finding an arm in the sleeve. Monsieur Beauvais did not return that night, but sent word to Madame Roget at 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening that an investigation was still in progress respecting her daughter. If we allow that Madame Roget, from her age and grief, could not go over, which is allowing a great deal, there certainly must have been someone who would have thought it worthwhile to go over and attend the investigation if they thought the body was that of Marie. Nobody went over. There was nothing said or heard about the matter in the Rue Pavée Saint-André that reached even the occupants of the same building. Monsieur Saint-Eustache, the lover and intended husband of Marie, who boarded in her mother's house, deposes that he did not hear of the discovery of the body of his intended until the next morning, when Monsieur Beauvais came into his chamber and told him of it. For an item of news like this, it strikes us it was very coolly received. In this way, the journal endeavored to create the impression of an apathy on the part of the relatives of Marie, inconsistent with the supposition that these relatives believed the corpse to be hers. Its insinuations amount to this, that Marie, with the connivance of her friends, had absented herself from the city for reasons involving a charge against her chastity, and that these friends, upon the discovery of a corpse in the Seine, somewhat resembling that of the girl, had availed themselves of the opportunity to impress the public with the belief of her death. But L'Etoile was again overhasty. It was distinctly proved that no apathy, such as was imagined, existed, that the old lady was exceedingly feeble and so agitated as to be unable to attend to any duty, that Saint-Eustache, so far from receiving the news coolly, was distracted with grief, and bore himself so frantically that Monsieur Beauvais prevailed upon a friend and relative to take charge of him and prevent his attending the examination at the disinterment. Moreover, although it was stated by L'Etoile that the corpse was reinterred at the public expense, that an advantageous offer of private sepulture was absolutely declined by the family, and that no member of the family attended the ceremonial, although I say all this was asserted by L'Etoile in furtherance of the impression it designed to convey, yet all this was satisfactorily disproved. In a subsequent number of the paper, an attempt was made to throw suspicion upon Beauvais himself. The editor says, "Now then, a change comes over the matter. We are told that on one occasion, while a Madame B. was at Madame Roget's house,
Monsieur Beauvais, who was going out, told her that a gendarme was expected there,
and that she, Madame B., must not say anything to the gendarme until he returned, but let the matter be for him.
In the present posture of affairs, Monsieur Beauvais appears to have the whole matter locked up in his head. A single step cannot be taken without Monsieur Beauvais, for go which way you will, you run against him."
For some reason, he determined that nobody shall have anything to do with the proceedings but himself, and he has elbowed the male relatives out of the way, according to their representations, in a very singular manner. He seems to have been very much averse to permitting the relatives to see the body.
By the following fact, some color was given to the suspicion thus thrown upon Beauvais.
A visitor at his office a few days prior to the girl's disappearance, and during the absence of its occupant, had observed a rose in the keyhole of the door and the name Marie inscribed upon a slate which hung near at hand. The general impression, so far as we were enabled to glean it from the newspapers, seemed to be that Marie had been the victim of a gang of desperados, that by these she had been borne across the river, maltreated, and murdered. La Commerciale, however, a print of extensive influence, was earnest in combating this popular idea. I quote a passage or two from its columns. "We are persuaded that pursuit has hitherto been on a false scent, so far as it has been directed to the Barrière de Roulet. It is impossible that a person so well known to thousands as this young woman was should have passed three blocks without someone having seen her, and anyone who saw her would have remembered it, for she interested all who knew her. It was when the streets were full of people when she went out.
It is impossible that she could have gone to the Barrière de Roulet or to the Rue de Drôme without being recognized by a dozen persons.
Yet no one has come forward who saw her outside her mother's door, and there is no evidence, except the testimony concerning her expressed intentions, that she did go out at all. Her gown was torn, bound round her, and tied, and by that the body was carried as a bundle.
If the murder had been committed at the Barrière de Roulet, there would have been no necessity for any such arrangement. The fact that the body was found floating near the barrière is no proof as to where it was thrown into the water.
A piece of one of the unfortunate girl's petticoats, 2 feet long and 1 foot wide, was torn out and tied under her chin around the back of her head, probably to prevent screams. This was done by fellows who had no pocket handkerchief. A day or two before the prefect called upon us, however, some important information reached the police, which seemed to overthrow at least the chief portion of Le Commerciel's argument.
Two small boys, sons of Madame de Luc, while roaming among the woods near the Barrière de Roulet, chanced to penetrate a close thicket,
within which were three or four large stones, forming a kind of seat with a back and footstool. On the upper stone lay a white petticoat. On the second, a silk scarf. A parasol, gloves, and a pocket handkerchief were also here found. The handkerchief bore the name Marie Roget. Fragments of dress were discovered on the brambles around. The earth was trampled. The bushes were broken. And there was every evidence of a struggle. Between the thicket and the river, the fences were found taken down, and the ground bore evidence of some heavy burthen having been dragged along it. A weekly paper, Le Soleil, had the following comments upon this discovery, comments which merely echoed the sentiment of the whole Parisian press. The things had all evidently been there at least 3 or 4 weeks. They were all mildewed down hard with the action of the rain and stuck together from mildew. The grass had grown around and over some of them. The silk on the parasol was strong, but the threads of it were run together within. The upper part, where it had been doubled and folded, was all mildewed and rotten, and tore on its being opened. The pieces of her frock torn out by the bushes were about 3 inches wide and 6 inches long. One part was the hem of the frock, and it had been mended. The other piece was part of the skirt, not the hem. They looked like strips torn off, and were on the thorn bush about a foot from the ground. There can be no doubt, therefore, that the spot of this appalling outrage has been discovered. Consequent upon this discovery, new evidence appeared. Madame de Luc testified that she keeps a roadside inn not far from the bank of the river, opposite the Barrière de Roulet. The neighborhood is secluded, particularly so. It is the usual Sunday resort of blackguards from the city who cross the river in boats. About 3 o'clock, in the afternoon of the Sunday in question, a young girl arrived at the inn, accompanied by a young man of dark complexion. The two remained here for some time. On their departure, they took the road to some thick woods in the vicinity. Madame de Luc's attention was called to the dress worn by the girl on account of its resemblance to one worn by a deceased relative. A scarf was particularly noticed. Soon after the departure of the couple, a gang of miscreants made their appearance, behaved boisterously, ate and drank without making payment, followed in the route of the young man and girl, returned to the inn about dusk, and recrossed the river as if in great haste. It was soon after dark, upon this same evening, that Madame de Luc, as well as her eldest son, heard the screams of a female in the vicinity of the inn. The screams were violent, but brief. Madame D. recognized not only the scarf which was found in the thicket, but the dress which was discovered upon the corpse. An omnibus driver, Valence, now also testified that he saw Marie Roget cross a ferry on the Seine on the Sunday in question, in company with a young man of dark complexion. He, Valence, knew Marie and could not be mistaken in her identity. The articles found in the thicket were fully identified by the relatives of Marie. The items of evidence and information thus collected by myself from the newspapers, at the suggestion of Dupin, embraced only one more point. But this was a point of seemingly vast consequence. It appears that immediately after the discovery of the clothes as above described, the lifeless or nearly lifeless body of Saint-Eustache, Marie's betrothed, was found in the vicinity of what all now supposed the scene of the outrage. A phial labeled laudanum and emptied was found near him. His breath gave evidence of the poison. He died without speaking. Upon his person was found a letter, briefly stating his love for Marie, with his design of self-destruction. "I need scarcely tell you," said Dupin as he finished the perusal of my notes, "that this is a far more intricate case than that of the Rue Morgue, from which it differs in one important respect. This is an ordinary, although an atrocious, instance of crime. There is nothing peculiarly outré about it. You will observe that for this reason, the mystery has been considered easy, when for this reason it should have been considered difficult of solution.
Thus, at first, it was thought unnecessary to offer a reward. The Myrmidons of Xi were able at once to comprehend how and why such an atrocity might have been committed. They could picture to their imaginations a mode, many modes, and a motive, many motives. And because it was not impossible that either of these numerous modes and motives could have been the actual one, they have taken it for granted that one of them must. But the ease with which these variable fancies were entertained, and the very plausibility which each assumed, should have been understood as indicative rather of the difficulties than of the facilities which must attend elucidation. I have therefore observed that it is by prominences above the plane of the ordinary that reason feels her way, if at all, in her search for the true, and that the proper question in cases such as this is not so much what has occurred, as what has occurred that has never occurred before. In the investigations at the house of Madame L'Espanier, the agents of G were discouraged and confounded by that very unusualness which, to a properly regulated intellect, would have afforded the surest omen of success. While the same intellect might have been plunged in despair at the ordinary character of all that met the eye in the case of the perfumery girl, and yet told of nothing but easy triumph to the functionaries of the prefecture. In the case of Madame L'Espanier and her daughter, there was, even at the beginning of our investigation, no doubt that murder had been committed. The idea of suicide was excluded at once. Here, too, we are freed at the commencement from all supposition of self-murder. The body found at the Barrière de Roulet was found under such circumstances as to leave us no room for embarrassment upon this important point. But it has been suggested that the corpse discovered is not that of Marie Roget, for the conviction of whose assassin, or assassins, the reward is offered, and respecting whom, solely, our agreement has been arranged with the prefect. We both know this gentleman well. It will not do to trust him too far. If, dating our inquiries from the body found, and then tracing a murderer, we yet discover this body to be that of some other individual than Marie, or, if starting from the living Marie we find her, yet find her unassassinated, in either case, we lose our labor, since it is Monsieur G with whom we have to deal. For our own purpose, therefore, if not for the purpose of justice, it is indispensable that our first step should be the determination of the identity of the corpse with Marie Roget, who is missing. With the public, the arguments of L'Etoile have had weight, and that the journal itself is convinced of their importance would appear from the manner in which it commences one of its essays upon the subject. Several of the morning papers of the day, it says, speak of the conclusive article in Monday's Etoile. To me, this article appears conclusive of little beyond the zeal of its inditer. We should bear in mind that, in general, it is the object of our newspapers rather to create a sensation, to make a point, than to further the cause of truth. The latter end is only pursued when it seems coincident with the former. The print, which merely falls in with ordinary opinion, however well-founded this opinion may be, earns for itself no credit with the mob. The mass of the people regard as profound only him who suggests pungent contradictions of the general idea.